This is Connections. It's a Monday. Hi, everyone. I'm Bill Newell along with Rick Moore. In just a moment, Rick will be talking with Julie Barry, the senior planner for arts and culture in the city of Salem. That coming up just ahead. And then Gary Larrabee will be joining us. Gary Larrabee is a golf historian, golf writer, still writes a column in the Salem News. For many years was a sports writer for the Salem News, has authored books and so on. And Gary will be joining us to talk about golf courses reopening in Massachusetts. So that story coming up in the program and all the business aspects associated with that and any other late golf news. Gary will be sharing that with us here on the program. And then at the end of our program, I'll be sharing a story with you about the dangers of reopening too fast. That story just ahead here on Connections.
All right, my great pleasure now to bring on Julie Barry, who is the senior planner for arts and culture in the city of Salem. And that sounds like a really big job, Julie. Welcome to MSO. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Tell me a little bit about the position. What is senior planner for arts and culture in the Witch City?
Well, it is a big position, I'll tell you that. I started back in October of 2019, so just a few months ago. And in that capacity, I oversee Old Town Hall and all the rentals and tenant use there. I also oversee Artist Row, all of the new artists that are coming in to those facilities. And then I oversee the public art initiatives for the city of Salem.
Now, look, I don't go to Salem a whole bunch, especially in October. But what is Artist Row?
Artist Row is it used to be an old marketplace. So it was an open market. There was a fishmonger. People would come and sell and trade. And I would say maybe 40 or 50 years ago, it was converted into enclosed, because it was just like open market stalls, and now they're enclosed buildings. It's where the lobster shanty currently resides. And then also there are four artists units that we rent out to artists that are looking to take a next step in their career. So they don't have to be just starting out, but it's used as a springboard platform to move artists to the next step in their creative process, whatever that may be. Mm-hmm. We've also just launched this year, which is brand new in terms of the longevity and how entrenched in the program it is, a public artist in residence program where we will be paying two artists. This year, the artist team that we've hired is Lauren Smeedley and Jacob Deagle, and they will be doing pop-up art interventions on Artist Row and across Salem. And so they will be based in unit number 5 on Artist Row, and we're paying them a stipend for 8 months. Once a month, we give them a stipend for 8 months throughout the 2020 season to do art interventions around Salem. And we're really excited about launching that program.
That sounds great. A couple of questions. First of all, the artist in residence sounds very similar to something that is going on up in Gloucester, as I recall. And they've had very good success with that, and a great review as well. And what is a pop-up intervention? That sounds pretty scary.
No, it's not scary at all. It's actually quite delightful. So, or I guess you could say pop-up interaction. So basically, they would just be doing public art pieces they consider themselves wayfinding, a graphic artist. So they stencil or paint directly on the sidewalks and roadways and parking lots and things like that around Salem, of course, all with permission from the city, mm-hmm. and sanctioned by the city, vetted through the city, to encourage people to travel specific routes or to inform people that pathways are there, and also just to be playful and whimsical.
Okay. All right. This is great because I know there's something similar in Newburyport as well. Now, we're recording this on Friday, and you have something scheduled for Saturday, and I'm guessing it's weather-dependent. But tell me a little bit about the chalk art.
Sure. So as part of Art Spring, a pop-up art initiative that the City of Salem has just recently launched. One of the components of this program is a Chalk Art Saturdays. So every Saturday from this coming Saturday, May 9th, through the end of June, the residents of Salem can look forward to seeing a new chalk art mural created by local artists throughout Salem. So we're hoping that each ward of Salem will be blessed with one of these pieces, if not a couple of pieces out of the Art Spring initiative, to bring every community of Salem a little bit of love and a little bit of art in this time.
That sounds really cool.
And, yeah, it's pretty exciting. So the locations will be kept secret until after they are installed for the artist's safety. And then once they are installed, we'll be posting images of the mural as well as the location on social media as well as on our website, which is salem.com/Public Art Commission, so that you could check out and follow us on our Facebook page, Salem Public Art, so that you can keep track of what all we're up to.
Now, do you have
every new installation that we put in will be featured on our website. As they go in, we'll add them to there.
That sounds cool. We'll have to link to that. And is this interactive? Because on the press release, there's something here that says join in by creating chalk art or for the mom figure in your life to kick off Chalk Art Saturdays. And then you've got a bunch of hashtags. So is this something that the public can get involved with as well online?
100%. Thank you for mentioning that. Yeah, so we're part of the fun with Chalk Art Saturdays is that we're encouraging the community members to join in. So the artists will be creating a piece based on a thought prompt, an art thought prompt. And this one is gratitude for mothers, and to show gratitude for the mother in your life, whoever that may be, a mother figure in your life. And so we're encouraging community members to get out and create their own chalk art on the sidewalk in front of their homes, in their backyards, on their driveways, whatever makes sense for them, where they feel safe. And of course, you know, observing the social distancing regulations and whatnot. So that, and then hashtagging us, so Salem Public Art, hashtag Salem Together, and hashtag Chalk Art Saturdays, so that all of that can get connected back to our Facebook page so we can see all of the wonderful work that our community has been up to.
I got a big smile on my face. I got three grandchildren, I'm sure, who are going to be in the Louvre someday with their chalk art, so we'll have to get them to do their stick figures as well.
Yes, absolutely.
That sounds great. Finally, Julie, the art walking tours, could you tell us a little bit about those? Because here's the thing, with the social distancing right now, people want to get out. They want to get out and get some exercise and stroll around. So is this something that's still possible in the city at this point?
Absolutely. So, of course, you know, we ask that you wear masks just to be on the safe side, to observe the walking patterns that have been outlined for the city. But we are encouraging you to find some art while you're out there, getting a little bit of exercise and fresh air, because we all need that in our lives. The sunshine can do so much for us to lift our spirits. And so just getting out and taking advantage of some of those walking tours that we put together. One of my colleagues was very gracious enough to put it into a PDF map form so that people can print this out. There's two different maps. One is for, I believe it's set up as East South Salem and Northwest Salem is in another map. So that there's two separate maps, and they've got historical monuments, the painted electrical boxes called art boxes, as well as murals scattered all across the city, and so that you could just go on a scavenger hunt and explore neighborhoods that you might not have been in otherwise, or find some art that you might not knew was there.
I love it. And anything else now that you'd like to tell us about that I didn't ask you about Salem Public Art or your role in all of this?
Sure. Well, the Art Spring has many, many components. So I would say keep your eyes open for the next wave of art news that will be coming out. One of the components is a yarn bomb sculpture that we'll be doing every Sunday.
Wait a minute. A what bomb sculpture?
Yarn bomb sculptures.
Okay, what's that?
So bomb is in air quotes. But basically it's pop-up yarn sculptures that would be on signposts or trees or, of course, all city sanctioned that we've organized. We're working with Circle of Stitches, which is a local Salem yarn shop, to help organize this. And so that's going to be another component of that that will be rolled out and featured on our website when we get that up and running. We have a mural that we're working on for Artist Row, and a number of other really exciting projects that will be popping up, springing up, if you will, around Salem. So just keep your eyes out, because there's so much more to come and so many more things to look forward to, and to hopefully bring a little bit of joy and whimsy into our community.
You know, I was feeling kind of low because there's no live sporting events, but man, I'm taking a different turn now. You've made my day. This sounds great.
Oh, wonderful. I'm thrilled to hear it. And you've made my day for being interested in the arts and helping to support them in this way. Mm. One of the things that I think is really exciting and just personally makes me feel good is that we're able to support local artists. So all of the artists are being paid for their work higher than minimum wage rates. And we're also commissioning local businesses, sourcing our materials from local businesses, working with local businesses to support them. So it really is a grassroots effort to put money back into the hands of our artists while bringing cheer to our community.
That is fantastic. That's Julie Barry, who is the Senior Planner for Arts and Culture in the City of Salem.
Rick, and just coming up here on Connections, Gary Larrabee will be joining us to talk golf, and we also will have a story for you on maybe the dangers of opening up a bit too fast. That just ahead.
Harrington Trophy has been rewarding the North Shore for over 30 years with quality custom awards, screen printing, embroidery, and more. We pride our family-owned business on our exceptional customer service and quality products for the right price. Custom t-shirts, sweatshirts, warm-up suits, hats, along with the area's top trophies, plaques, glass awards, we are the one-stop shop for end-of-the-year banquets or advertising your small business through apparel. Come see us at Harrington Trophy, Chestnut Street, Lynn, or harringtontrophy.com.
Enjoy the taste of summer all year round at Cherry Farm Creamery. Pick up an ice cream cake for that special occasion. Cherry Farm Creamery offers the best ice cream right off Route 128 on Conant Street in Danvers. Or visit them at cherryfarmcreamery.com.
Gary Larrabee is joining us. Gary is a golf writer, golf historian, writes for the Salem News, used to be a full-time sports writer for the Salem News for so many years, and always on North Shore Sports Night talking golf. And Gary, welcome. Thanks for joining us here on Connections.
Always great to be with you, Bill.
Gary, wanted to focus here on the business of golf, if you will, with the governor announcing last week that golf courses could reopen. And they did reopen. Some reopened right away. Others are reopening as we speak, I imagine. But the golfers were out there this past weekend at many golf courses. So tell us what this means for the golf courses, and what did the last couple of months mean for the golf courses?
Well, thankfully this happened, this pandemic. There's no reason to be thankful for it, but the fact that it happened over the winter was a big blessing for the golf industry, obviously. The golf industry in Massachusetts, Bill, is a $1 billion-plus industry. And granted, we only have a 6 or 7 month season, but thankfully, the industry wasn't hurt too much, because normally golf courses wouldn't be open till sometime in April anyways. Although this past winter, we had a very good winter, so a lot of the courses, virtually all the municipal public courses and many of the private courses would have opened, and some of them did open for a very short period in early March because of the mild winter, before the pandemic hit hard and hit Massachusetts hard. So there was considerable revenue loss until the governor opened up golf last week. The most noteworthy aspect of this bill is the fact that, you know, this was the first economy, if you will, in Massachusetts that had been limited or shut down before this to be reopened by the governor. And it's great news all around for golf, even though there are a great number of restrictions, guidelines, if you will, by which these golf courses, public and private, can open. There's no clubhouses are open. The pro shops are not open. Everything is done by phone, online. Very limitations as to how they can play the game on the golf course. But the bottom line is golf is back in business, and it's a good thing. Imagine, Bill, if this pandemic hadn't hit America and hadn't hit Massachusetts until June or July. You'll see you later to the golf season from that point forward. And even though, Bill, now I'm a little concerned as to how it's going to evolve. The reports over the weekend were not good for numbers in Massachusetts and some very, very questionable reports from other states where there is golf. You know, there's a lot of concern about a second wave of this pandemic hitting a lot of the states, particular states where everyone's got golf. So I think it's really still hold your breath, be grateful the golf courses are open, and hopefully golfers will adhere to all the guidelines, and we could be in some more serious trouble with this COVID-19 down the road.
Gary, I think that you're right, and I wonder whether a couple of things usually the golf industry, I liken it kind of to the restaurant business or the ski industry. The ski industry, if you don't have snow, you don't make any money, and you lose lots of money. And you're right about the golf being closed in March and April, or April and not being the end of the world kind of a deal. But if numbers don't come back, I would imagine that is a problem, because there's a thing of margins. Like, restaurants really need to be full to make money, and that's how they did it in the past. And golf courses, volume, volume, volume for the most part, right?
No question. And it's really, like I said, it's wait and see, and there are lots of concerns that this COVID-19 is not going to go away quickly. It's going to go away very slowly, which will certainly have a negative impact on the golf industry throughout the season. And there's still no guarantees that all these big championships they were hoping that would be played both locally, regionally, and nationally, and even internationally, will be played. Of course, there's no open championship over in Great Britain this year. But we are anxious and hopeful that the other three majors will be played here in the United States later in the season. But Bill, I'm still holding my breath and keeping my fingers crossed. And, my brother's a head golf professional up in New Hampshire at Eastman Golf Links, and they opened for business today per the governor's directive from a week and a half ago. But boy, it's going to be careful. It's going to be slow. And all the numbers are going to be down this year. And all the private country clubs and the clubhouse business, guest business. And of course, a big part of the income at all clubs, whether they're public or private, municipal or whatever, are the golf cart revenue. And right now, golf carts are being limited and restricted only because of a governor's edict from late last week based on the American Disabilities Act. There will be some availability of golf carts only for those people who have proper documentation with them as they come to the golf course because of their physical or medical condition to be able to use a golf cart. And only one person per golf cart, which would be helpful in the revenue stream, but still it's going to be a slow go. And I think it's just a question of how all these businesses, and the golf is a business, whether it's country, club, private, whatever, it's going to be a challenge for these businesses to manage financially during the year. And we'll see how it goes, but it's 1 week at a time, and just keeping our fingers crossed.
Gary, do you think, by the way, did you go out golfing yet so far this year?
I have not, though. I've become a fair weather golfer in my golden years. I'm not even interested in I'd like to chip around my backyard and whatnot. I may hit golf balls, but I don't play till June anyways, and I'll just hold my breath and hopefully get out there sometime in June. And but let's see how things go, and hopefully we won't be getting any reports that there's been some COVID-19 outbreaks among staff or whatnot at any of the golf courses, public or private.
Yeah, no, exactly. You know, you are right. The other thing about, I mean, you have the greens fees, which, as you noted, would be collected online now, so they don't have to make physical contact. And you mentioned the golf cart piece, so that was news to me because I knew they had banned golf carts initially in the reopening of the golf courses. But then it's that 19th hole that I keep talking about with folks. I mean, that has to be one of the money makers for golf courses as well, and the pro shop, and that's not open. And so those are revenue sources that they do kind of count on.
Oh, major revenue source. Let's face it, golf is such a beloved sport, and it's dealt with by such rabid personalities. People just love the game who are involved with the game, and of course, the sociability aspect of golf is huge. And of course, that's not being allowed during these current conditions because of the COVID-19 situation. You can't do a lot of back slapping on the golf course. You can't do a lot of horseplay, and you get to stay away from each other when golf is very sociable before you tee it up and during your 9 or 18 holes, and afterwards in particular, wherever you go to have a drink or have dinner or whatnot. And that sociability aspect is a major player in revenue, and that's not even being allowed right now unless you go to someone's private home.
Gary, is there any news that you have on any of the local golf courses on their reopening or not reopening? Because I know Gannon Golf Course in Lynn, the word came out Thursday, and they were open Thursday. You know what I'm saying? I think that was the day, right? Yeah, Thursday was the day, yeah. So they opened right away. Other golf courses, you know, are waiting, I think, until today or over the weekend and so on.
Well, golf courses are in fantastic condition, not because of the lack of play, but in part because of the lack of play, but golfers are never going to find their golf courses in better condition for early mid-May to start off. Beyond that, we have a new head golf professional at Tedesco, and Jake Leach, who succeeded his boss, Bob Green, who was at Tedesco for 41 years, longest-serving head golf professional at a private club in the history of the North Shore. So Jake's gotten off to a rough start without too much early season business. The other thing you just made reference to, Bill, the pro shop business.
Yeah.
All the golf courses have pro shops, whether they have a little shack or a big, large showroom, if you will, for some of the private country clubs who like to have a big pro shop, lots of merchandise. And that's been a big hurt on the club pro level. Club pros make a lot of their money from instruction and from what they sell in their pro shops for the most part. And that's being lost on a daily basis. And we've had some great weather. As you know, the last week's been the best weather of the spring. It looks like it's going to continue for somewhat this week. So that's a big factor, too. You know, everything is all about money still. We have to talk about the money factor. And we're holding our breath. I keep using that term. But really, we've never been down this road before and hope we'll never be down it again. But I'm afraid this is going to be a real rough year for the golf industry, for every industry that's going to get back up and running, hopefully, before too long. But it's just the way of life for all of us who was listening to our conversation here. We're all affected, and we just have to keep going one day at a time, very slow go.
I think, too, as all businesses look to reopen, you know, things such as golf or entertainment pieces or things like that, people will want to have to come back to them. And I think, to me, that people are going to be a little bit cautious, certainly for moving forward in the next several weeks. People are cautious. And the other thing, too, maybe over the weekend for numbers, you did have Mother's Day. Once in a while, a golfer will even not golf on a Mother's Day just for that. I mean, it's hard. I'm not saying that all golfers ignore playing golf on Mother's Day, but some might. You know what I'm saying, Gary?
No, many do, and golfers still know that the women in their lives oftentimes dictate how much golf they can play during a given golf season. They want to take care of mums and mothers-in-law and grandmothers and daughters who may be mothers and whatnot. So it's a very important day.
Hey.
And that's it. That's just the nature of the beast. But the bottom line continues to be, Bill, that I think you're right. It's going to be a very slow return to the game. It's going to be a very slow return to every industry. And so many people want to get back to work. And it's, you know, enormously large unemployment rates. And, you know, the airline business is going to be almost disappearing over the next few months. And a lot of us had trips we had planned for spring, summer, fall, or I'm even worried about a trip we hope to take to Europe next May after this May's trip to Europe was canceled because of all the mess. So we're in more uncharted territory, Bill, and a long road ahead, a long difficult road ahead in all respects. The idea is that don't get COVID-19, play by the rules. And we'll all be better off.
Hey, Gary, I have to ask you one last thing, and then I'll let you go. This golf competition that involves Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Tiger Woods, and Phil Mickelson. They had a video the other day. It was pretty entertaining, actually, with the four of them. What's your take? What do you know about that? When is that going to take place?
I believe it's later this month. It's at a Florida golf course. The name of that course escapes me, but there's going to be another very interesting match, I believe, sometime later this month at the famous Seminole Club, golf club in Florida, involving four of the biggest names on the PGA Tour. And, of course, these are both going to be raising lots of money for COVID-19-related initiatives to help people who are being dealing with this COVID-19, either economically or medically. Keep an eye out on your sports sections and your TV listings. It'll be our first chance to watch some live golf this year. I should say this year since March. And of course, I think everyone's still keeping their fingers crossed that we'll start to watch some live golf again in June. Right now, the PGA Tour hopes to get going again the second or third week of June in Fort Worth, Texas, and that would include Rob Oppenheim, Salem-born Andover bred, who will be playing that week if they're back in action. But there's still a lot of questions, Bill, as to when all the pro tours will get back into action and whether we'll see some live golf sooner rather than later.
All right, Gary, always great information with you, and so thanks for taking a few minutes to join us here on Connections.
Always a pleasure, Bill.
Gary Larrabee, golf writer, golf historian, and also writes a column in the current, still writes the column in the Salem News. Finally on Connections, you can't blame people for feeling a bit excited about the possibility that the economy is beginning to reopen. We just talked with Gary Larrabee on golf. Now, out on the Cape, Polar Cave Ice Cream Parlor reopened. However, it was not a good experience. Was it a danger because they were spreading COVID-19 or the coronavirus? No, that wasn't it at all either. Mark Lawrence says on Boston.com, he's the owner of that popular Cape Cod ice cream shop. They reopened but had to close hours later after customers got angry about dessert orders being backed up and they started harassing employees. Polar Cave Ice Cream Parlor owner Mark Lawrence said it was one of the worst experiences of the 19 years that he has owned the shop. And although he had set a rule that orders had to be received an hour ahead of pickup, customers were showing up at his shop early, demanding their ice cream. Get this now. We're coming out of the coronavirus. The economy's been shut down. We're reopening. He opens up his ice cream shop. Essential ice cream? Oh, you make the decision on that one. But they're demanding their ice cream. Lawrence wrote on his business Facebook page that he said it was one of his best workers, a teenager, quit her job because of the barrage of abusive comments. quote, regardless of people's frustrations, to take it out on a teenage girl is simply wrong. That's all caps, he wrote. It cost me one of my best employees due to the rudeness directed at her. So wrong that in many ways to treat a teenager with such disrespect, no matter what the circumstances are. Lawrence had opened the shop quietly Friday ahead of the Mother's Day weekend. He told Boston 25 News, but a surge in people ordering dessert quickly crushed the lean staff and he had behind the counter. And while the number of orders was enough for the staff of seven, he said only four employees were working that night. At about 7 p.m., Lawrence posted on his Facebook, "Stop calling." So we got to be careful. We got to be thinking. We got to be patient. And we got to remember that as much as we'd like it to go back to the old way, it's just not going to happen right away. And be thinking of your fellow citizens out there, whether they're teenagers or what. Just be careful. All right. So that's it for us today on Connections. A special thanks to both of our guests joining us on the program. Gary Larrabee from writes for the Salem News, golf historian, talking about the business of golf, and also Julie Berry, senior planner for arts and culture for the city of Salem. Check back with us tomorrow. Another Connections show coming up, so stay with us here. I'm Bill Newell along with Rick Moore. Connections here on MSONewsSports.com. This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Professional builders and remodelers choose Anderson Windows more than any other brand in the United States. They do so because Anderson Windows and patio doors offer beautiful natural wood interiors, low-maintenance exteriors, and outstanding energy efficiency. See the complete line of Anderson Windows at any of our three locations in Beverly, North Reading, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.